Good morning, everybody. This is Will, and you're listening to Two Man Congress. Alrighty, so let's get into it. Chad and I discussed, and one thing that we want to do is we want to have these debates, but we also talked about how much time and preparation it takes to have those debates. So we thought that it would be a good idea to maybe have opportunities where Chad and I do our own personal little episode, just something short and quick, so that you can receive a couple of additional information that we didn't have a chance to talk about in our previous episodes. So we're going to do our debates every other week, and then we are going to do these little individual episodes on the off weeks. Chad and I will each do one a month, and we'll try and get as much good, positive content to you as we possibly can. So let us know if you think that this is a good idea, and provide any comments of what you like and what you don't like, or if we should stop doing this altogether. But with that said, what I want to talk about specifically is what kinds of speech is constitutionally protected speech. So in our last episode, we talked about some policy recommendations for social media censorship because of what had ended up happening. And those policy suggestions includes like a three-part platform. And the first part of that is that social media should still remain protected from liability for what people say on their platform. So that provision would still stay the same. The second provision would change from the original to this, to broken up into two parts. First, social media platforms would be protected from liability for censoring constitutionally unprotected speech. But they would, third part would be unprotected from liability for censoring constitutionally protected speech. So we talked about the suggestions, but we never actually got down to the details about what is considered constitutionally protected speech and what is not. And so those are some things that we're going to talk about today. And there are two kinds of things that we need to know, is that certain kinds of speech are protected while others are not. And then where the speech takes place is an important detail. And so that's what we're going to be focusing on. Now, the First Amendment states that Congress shall make no law prohibiting the freedom of speech or the right to peaceably assemble and gather to petition their grievances. However, the Supreme Court has not interpreted no law to mean no law, meaning that there are certain kinds of speech that are most protected, there are certain kinds of speech that are somewhat protected, and there are certain kinds of speech that are not protected at all. And those kinds of speech that are protected are content-based material. So you can't discriminate against someone just because of their political viewpoints or because of their religious affiliation. For example, you can't just, if someone has a religious sign outside pointing times to when their religious services are, you can't make a rule specifically targeting those signs. What you would have to do is create a law that is content neutral, and these are somewhat protected. Content neutral laws are regulations that apply to everybody, regardless of their association. For instance, solicitation laws or permits for parks and things like that are considered content neutral regulations, as long as they don't discriminate against a certain group or organization. And those kind of regulations are somewhat protected. Now, what kind of speech is not protected is things like obscene material, libel, or criminal speech. And when I say criminal speech, I mean things like perjury, conspiracy, or inciting violence. And those things have not been considered protected speech by the Supreme Court. Now that we've talked a little bit about what kinds of speech are currently protected, let's just go into a bit of the history and talk about how we got to where we're at. So in Schneck versus the United States, the Supreme Court introduces something called the clear and present danger test. In Schneck, it was a time about the war, during a war. This was 1917, I believe, is when the opinion was handed down. But there, Schneck was going around and passing out pamphlets that encouraged people to revolt against the government during this time. And the Supreme Court didn't like this because it presented a clear and present danger to the United States government in the middle of a foreign conflict. Now, the court kind of moved away from this test and went to a bad tendency test versus Gitlow. Well, in Gitlow versus New York. And the bad tendency test in Gitlow, who was a communist, and this was during the Red Scare, and he was one of the leaders. What happened here is that even though he wasn't presenting a clear and present danger, his tendency of what he was sending might result in a clear and present danger, and that's what a bad tendency is. So the justices in this gave this example that his content was a spark that, if nourished long enough, could turn into a flame, a fire that could engulf and present a clear and present danger for the United States. And so that a test was often used. But in Caroline Products versus the United States, in footnote number 4, and it's probably one of the most famous footnotes out there for constitutional law, it's something called the preferred freedoms. And so what that means is there are several preferred freedoms that are mentioned in the Bill of Rights. And those preferred freedoms require a lot of protection. And so any law that infringes on those freedoms needs to be scrutinized heavily. And so what this is, it's called strict scrutiny. And any law that is passed needs to have a high government interest, a very strong one. And any regulations must be narrowly tailored, meaning that it has a very little effect on infringing rights outside of the one that is trying to narrowly tailor. And there are tons of examples where the United States has a high interest. They have a high interest to prevent violence. They have a high interest to prevent property damage, criminal speech, encroaching on the right of others, burdening government functions, and trespass. And that's just kind of a general list of things that they have a high interest in restricting so that people can speak freely without breaking those kind of things. All right, so now that we've discussed the history and what kind of speech is most protected, we're going to talk about a couple of examples of speech that has been deemed protected speech or speech that has not been deemed protected speech. And for these examples, we want to discuss symbolic speech and then ensuring order. So there are two cases that we're going to discuss briefly for symbolic speech. That is United States versus O'Brien and Texas v. Johnson. So in United States v. O'Brien, David O'Brien took his draft card in 1966 and he burned it in front of the Boston courthouse. There was a hostile crowd that gathered, and the FBI took them to question them. In this questioning, they said that they violated the 1948 Selective Service Act and by burning the draft cards, and said that that was illegal. They were arrested, and O'Brien said that this freedom of expression, even though he wasn't necessarily speaking, this expression was considered protected First Amendment speech. So this went to the Supreme Court, and they discussed it. And here is what they had to say. In conclusion, we find that because of the government's substantial interest in assuring the continuing availability of issued Selective Service Certificates, because amended B is an appropriately narrow means of protecting this interest and condemns only the independent, non-communicative impact of conduct within its reach, and because the non-communicative impact of O'Brien's act of burning his registration certificate frustrated the government's interest, a sufficient governmental interest has been shown to justify O'Brien's conviction. In other words, the Supreme Court upheld the conviction because the United States had a strong interest in maintaining the Selective Service Act. And the Selective Service Act just allows people to be, it makes it legal for the United States to draft people. So they had a strong interest in upholding that act, and O'Brien's actions went against that interest. Also, the Supreme Court said that that interest was narrowly tailored to where it only protected the Selective Service Act and nothing else. So the Supreme Court held that this symbolic speech was not okay because of the governmental interest. However, in Texas versus Johnson, this is a case about the burning of the American flag. And Johnson said that this was his protected speech because it was symbolic. It didn't cause any harm. It didn't hurt anybody. And in Texas, it said that it violated their law. So this case went to the Supreme Court. And ultimately, what ended up happening is because there was no harm or impact on the people, the burning of the American flag in this instance was all right. The Congress did not like that, obviously, and they created a law to overturn Johnson. However, that law was also brought to court and was found unconstitutional as well. So burning the American flag in certain ways was found justifiable. Now, the second example that we want to talk about is ensuring order, the preservation of order. And in Chaplinsky versus New Hampshire, there was a Jehovah Witness named Walter Chaplinsky, and he was selling religious pamphlets to a large crowd that had gathered outside of a building. And this crowd became very hostile, and he was very hostile to the crowd. And ultimately, the authorities came, and to try and prevent any more hostility, arrested Chaplinsky, who complained and that his right to speech was prohibited because of his expression. And he complained that people who were going against him should be the ones arrested, not him. In this instance, the Supreme Court held that his conviction was justified because he was using something called fighting words, and he was causing harm and inciting violence with these fighting words. What they say is the court agreed with this fighting doctrine that the government may regulate words directed at another individual which by their very utterance inflict injury or tend to incite immediate breach of peace. So those are just a couple of examples of constitutional cases mentioned by the court that show what kind of speech is most protected, what kind of speech is somewhat protected, and what kind of speech is not protected. This has been a major issue ever since speech has become more and more popular, and lots of, including the civil rights movement, any other movements, Donald Trump's election, and all these things. That you could even say January 6th, where speech has been brought into question a lot, and it's been brought into question a lot more and more recently. It was nearly 100 years before the first case was brought before the Supreme Court regarding speech, but now there have been many courts, including schools and locations, and what kind of speech is harmful and what kind of speech is not. So those are a lot of the Supreme Court cases and the way that they've interpreted what kind of speech is constitutionally protected and what kind of speech is not protected. So now let's discuss some of the implications and what this means for you. Well, obviously, the first thing to know is that this information is important because it's interesting. You can just use this information to your knowledge to know what kinds of court cases have been considered constitutionally protected speech and what ones have not been considered constitutionally protected speech. The other important reason for bringing this up is because it helps to refine the policy suggestions. Because the courts have developed such a vast method of interpreting these cases, we have a lot of knowledge about what is protected and what is not. So, a good way to just phrase the policy suggestions that we made in social media censorship is to just say that it's bound by the Constitution. It's a simple way of doing it, but ultimately what it's going to do is that those that are unconstitutional speech would be censored on social media, while those that are constitutionally protected speech would not remain censored on social media. And social media companies can be held liable for those things. So it just helps to know that this information is already out there and it is relevant, and you don't need to recreate all of this information to alter the current law and policy. All right, thank you everyone for listening to this episode of Two Man Congress. If you like what we had to say, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It'll help get our name up there in the rankings. That way other people can listen to content like this. Also, please feel free to leave us a review, a comment, and that way we know what we're doing is actually helping. And then finally, please go to patreon.com/twomancongress. And that's spelled out TWOMANCONGRESS. To support us and to join in a lot of exciting things that we're doing on Patreon as well. So that's it for this time, and we'll see you all next week. Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Law Schoolers. Before I let you go, there are four things I want to say. The first thing is, if you enjoyed these episodes and if you enjoyed the website, I would invite you to go and join Law Schoolers Pro. And you can do that by going to lawschoolers.com/join. It's a way for you to support us, but there's also a lot of features there that I think you will enjoy. Second thing is that nearly all of our episodes are unedited. The only ones that aren't our pre-law materials, and the reason for that is so you can actually see the legal material in its raw form as I'm learning it as well. The third thing is that the information contained in these episodes are specifically only for educational purposes. They're not to be used as legal advice, and with that, the fourth thing is, if it is used as legal advice, we are not liable. That is, Law Schoolers is not liable for any legal outcomes. Thank you again for enjoying the show. Have a good one.